Counsel, I believe you were all in the courtroom when we opened court this morning, were you not? And heard the explanation that Chief Justice O'Connor will be watching your arguments and participating in the deliberations of your case. The next matter before us is In re DB, a minor child, and representing DB, Ms. Burns, I'm sorry.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice O'Connor, in her absence. May it please the court, counsel. I would like to note that I'm also joined today by counsel for amicus curiae, Nadia Siratan from the National Juvenile Defender Center. She will be observing arguments today. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. In the summer of 2007, three boys, ages 12, 12, and 11, participated in multiple acts of sexual conduct. Despite their joint participation, one of them was adjudicated delinquent of 5 counts of statutory rape of a child under the age of 13. The General Assembly enacted Revised Code Section 2907.02A1B as a strict liability provision in order to establish an age of legal consent and to protect a specific class of persons from the sexual advances of others. However, as the statute contains no minimum age of applicability, it is being applied not only to persons over the age of consent, but also to children who are under the age of consent and thus within the class of persons that the statute was designed to protect.
Ms. Burns, is your argument that at least one of the individuals must be over the age of 13? Is that basically what your argument would boil down to?
Yes, Your Honor, that the General Assembly did not intend for this statute to apply to a member of the protected class under the statute.
Counsel, are there... This was not a case in which there was any attempt to bind over.
No, Your Honor.
And are there other ramifications other than treating this child as a delinquent child?
Yes, Your Honor. There are other options that the state could have pursued.
No, ramifications to a finding of delinquency. Are there unusual long-term implications for this child?
Yes, Your Honor.
Finding of delinquency.
Yes, Your Honor, there are. For instance, in the future, should DB choose to move to one of the 12 states in which children who were found delinquent at the age of 12 are registered under the Federal Adam Walsh Act or the state's versions of the Adam Walsh Act or similar acts, DB could become a lifetime registrant placed on the web for the public.
But
to
would see. Not be in Ohio.
It would not be in Ohio, at least not today, Your Honor. Should the General Assembly choose to change that in the future, that could change as well. In addition, DB has been in sex offender treatment for close to 3 years now at this point, during which he goes through the traditional sex offender treatment, but after 3 years, he's still in that treatment. And studies have shown that there is psychological damage, both for those who are labeled as offenders and labeled as victims in situations such as this. 2907A1B has an inherent presumption that children under the age of 13 are incapable of consenting to sexual conduct. The General Assembly appears to have placed in this statute the idea that children of this tender age, when they engage in sexual conduct, may get into situations they are not emotionally ready for. However, that is a reason to justify the protection of these children from persons over the age of consent.
Can you explain to me why the other children weren't charged? Because the statute, as you've pointed out, is a strict liability statute. There's no mens rea requirement. And if all three boys were engaged in sexual activity, then charges should have been brought against all three of them, according to the prosecutor's argument in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. That is what we submit. The record indicates that the state and the juvenile court relied on elements not contained in subsection A1B in order to justify a finding of delinquency of DB in this case. They relied on his size, his role as the initiator of the conduct, the fact that he and MG exchanged video games for sex in order to justify charging him. But the language of the statute is clear. If one is guilty, all are guilty, because the statute does not require any additional elements, only the age of the child and that sexual conduct occurred. This is precisely why this statute violates due process. It's unconstitutionally vague in that the lack of enforcement guidelines give the state no direction as to whom to charge as an offender and whom to charge as a victim when both are under the age of 13. This sets up a situation where, at the time of the conduct, neither of these youth had noticed that one of them would be chosen as the victim and one would be chosen as the offender under subsection A1B.
The factual considerations here don't make a difference. I think there was some findings that the one, I believe, was older, the one that was charged was older, that cajoled and bullied and a number of other things, to which the prosecution concluded that he, in fact, was the aggressor in this situation. Do those facts not count for anything?
Not for a finding of culpability under A1B, Your Honor. Initially, the state attempted to charge, or actually did charge DB, for violating Section 290702A2, which is the forcible rape provision. When it could not prove that, the A1B was kind of the catch-all, because in reality, at no time did DB deny that the conduct occurred.
But wouldn't that be a rational, would not that be a rational basis for which the prosecutor or the state to determine to prosecute one and not to prosecute the others?
Not under the language of the statute, Your Honor. If the General Assembly were
It's not mandatory prosecution. The prosecution could have decided to prosecute nobody. Is that correct?
Yes. The prosecution could have decided to divert this case or to not charge any delinquency count at all. However, if the General Assembly intended for only one child to be charged in a circumstance like this, based on the plain language of the statute, then it is a violation of equal protection, as there is nothing in the statute that justifies the charging of one child over the other of this subsection.
Isn't that really the issue, though? Because they did initially try to charge rape by force and drop that because they could not prove force. And here you have three young men. I mean, God help us if we start going with what conduct 12 and 13-year-olds are doing across this state. Prosecutors will be inundated by these types of cases, and it does appear to be selective prosecution. You have two different descriptions of this young man in the record. One, if we are to believe the state, he is this oversized 13-year-old who was cajoling. However, if you look at the alleged victim, he seems to be manipulative, asking for video games and favors. So you really do have two young men separated by less than a year in age engaging in sexual exploration, one of them being determined by the state through evidence not required by the statute as the victim. I'm puzzled as to why the strict liability standard was not applied against both.
Yes, Your Honor, that is precisely the problem. As the state has submitted and insisted since the beginning of this case, there are no exceptions to the language of 2907-02A1B. And if that is true, then all three boys should have been charged.
So in that case, then, if the prosecution should go back and charge the other two, then your arguments and your case goes away?
No, Your Honor, I would submit that that would be an absurd result that the General Assembly did not intend, in that it would be hard to fathom how the state has a legitimate interest in protecting the three boys from each other and then also charging them all as offenders against one another.
Your basic argument is the statute does not apply in this situation, period.
Yes, Your Honor. As noted by this court in In Re MD, the Cuyahoga County Court has a practice where when statutory rape is alleged against a child who is under the age of 13, the case is diverted from delinquency to unruly. In fact, this is what defense counsel asked to have happen in this case, as defense counsel at the beginning of trial, at the end of the state's case, and at the end of trial was firmly convinced that this case should not have been brought against DB.
What legal significance between the delinquency and the unruliness?
The unruly, Your Honor, would be to have a justification that children this age probably should not be engaging in sexual conduct, that they're not.
In that instance, to go back to Justice Pfeiffer's question, would there be other ramifications to a finding of an unruly child as opposed to a delinquent child in this case?
For this young man, he could have been placed on supervision by the court. He could have been.
Well, he was placed on supervision.
Yes, Your Honor, but the penalty for him violating supervision now is 5 years in the Department of Youth Services. And that's a significant difference from what the court could have done in its supervisory power in an unruly case.
And in an unruly case, would there be other ramifications for registration in other states?
Not at this point, Your Honor, no. It would have to be an actual adjudication for a sex offense in order for him to be registration eligible elsewhere.
Your point is because the youth involved here were both perpetrators and victims, there should be no charge.
Yes, Your Honor, to a point, but also that the General Assembly did not design this statute to prohibit this type of conduct between
these
two.
Can you envision a situation in which a person under the age of 13 engages in sexual activity with another person under the age of 13, which should result in charges under this statute?
The way the statute is currently written now, Your Honor, no. However, the General Assembly could amend the statute to include some of the scenarios that the state has put forth as being reasons not to find that the General Assembly did not intend to apply this statute to persons under the age of 13.
In no hypothetical circumstance, if a 12-year-old would, by force, engage in conduct, sexual conduct with another person, that still would not result in a charge.
Not under this statute. It could, however, result in a charge and a finding of delinquency under 2907.02A2. Sorry.
How would that operate?
Because one of the elements of a charge under A2 is force or threat of force. So there's still an option for the state to protect children under the age of consent, even from other children under the age of consent, where force exists and can be proven. But a subsection A1B does not make any provision for that.
Thank you.
Would that include, following up on Justice O'Donnell's scenario, a 12-year-old boy furnishes alcohol to a 12-year-old girl, gets her drunk, and then has sex with her?
In that case, Your Honor, the state could charge the violation under subsection A1A, which specifically provides for incapacitation due to alcohol.
So if they can't show force, no charge for anyone.
If they can't show
Under the age of 13.
Not under A1B, Your Honor. A1C is still available, and A1A are both still available as viable options should the child fit those specific parameters. So if a child were to provide another child with alcohol or drugs, the elements of those statutes could be met in a way that I think would be fair and just, because there's no notice problem. There's no issue of both children being equally situated if one provides the other with some type of intoxicant.
Ms. Burns, what you're limiting this to is consensual conduct between 13-year-olds, correct?
In the proposition, Your Honor, yes. However, I think that there is a violation any time this strict liability statute is applied to only one child in a case where you have both under the age of consent. Okay. By example, if DB would have been 13 or an adult at the time of the allegations, there would be no question as to who was more responsible, as the state submits. Likewise, if the roles had been reversed and MG were 13 or an adult, there would be no question as to who was culpable, even if the court found that DB gave MG video games. If MG were above the age of consent, he would have been the offender and DB the victim. This case illustrates the problem with applying a strict liability statute to one of the persons that the statute itself was meant to protect. For this reason, we would ask that this court would find that Revised Code Section 2907.02a1b unconstitutional as applied to a child under 13, or in the alternative, find that the General Assembly did not intend for this statute to apply to persons under the age of 13.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. You've got about a minute left for any rebuttal that you would like.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Reamer.
Chief Justice O'Connor, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Christopher Reamer, Assistant Lincoln County Prosecutor for Appellee State of Ohio in this case. Your Honor, the primary issue in this case relates to whether or not the application of the statute 2907.02a1b, Ohio statutory rape statute, results in an absurd result when applied to a minor under the age of 13 as the offender. The appellant's argument, DB, in this case is largely premised upon the argument that the factual scenario in this case relates to a consensual, in that word's ordinary plain meaning, activity between two minors under the age of 13, both members of the protected class.
I have a little trouble understanding if we have a statutory presumption that there is no ability to give consent.
Correct,
under
Your
the
Honor.
Age of 13, how you have the ability to then engage in sexual activity that's chargeable when you don't have the ability to consent to that conduct.
Your Honor, a state would agree with you as to that assessment. Throughout this case, for clarification, probably to the detriment of the case and confusion in the record, the magistrate and trial court sometimes made reference to the consensual nature of this offense. I think using the ordinary plain meaning of the word consensual, that could have been phrased better. Unfortunately, it was not. The phrasing of this as consensual, or for lack of a better word, putting these two individuals on co-equal footing in their behavior of this offense, frankly, just does not bear out in the record.
That's not really my mind's more of a legal question. You're going back to the facts, which we have to get past the legal argument of whether you could even do this under the way the statute's phrased. And I have a hard time understanding how you can say somebody under the age of 13 can't consent. In other words, they can't agree to have sex. And yet you're charging this kid that's under 13 with essentially consenting, in other words, making a conscious decision to have sex, when the statute says you're presumed that you can't make that decision at that age.
Well, Your Honor, there was a bit of discrepancy in the appellant's initial argument, if I can clarify that. In the amended complaint in this case, the state actually alleged force in the alternative. That was in the second or amended complaint that was done later on.
And was force found?
Force was not found by the trial court.
So then that gets back to my question. It was how can he form the ability to commit the act when the statute says he cannot under the age of 13?
How can he, because of the strict liability nature of the offense, Your Honor,
the bases on which you found strict liability don't exist. You don't have force, you don't have the drugs, the alcohol. You have simply a child who's a protected class, and so where is your strict liability? What does it rest on when he is a victim as well as the statute considered a victim as well as a perpetrator?
Well, Your Honor, it was never the state's belief that the evidence in this case wasn't sufficient for force, and that's why the complaint was amended. Ultimately, the trial court did not find there was sufficient evidence for force.
So then why didn't the trial court dismiss the charge when it couldn't find force?
Your Honor, if I may go into some of the findings, there was some of the record that was made in this case. Specifically, the record would demonstrate that the DB was twice as large of an individual in this case, that he oftentimes used bribery, wrestling, cajoling to get a much smaller individual to participate in these sexual activities with him.
But doesn't the record also indicate that MG, that these were two boys that were engaging in exploratory conduct together? In fact, the record demonstrates that MG acknowledged initiating the ask for the video games, and sometimes when he wanted video games would initiate the conduct. They're kids.
Your Honor, I don't believe the record does demonstrate that MG ever initiated. I would concede there were occasions that he did ask for items as a result of this. However, I think the trial court found that, as they found it in their findings of fact, they characterized it as submissive compliance.
The trial court was troubled, as I read the record. He seemed to go back and forth between whether MG was also an instigator, as DB was, and seemed to be troubled by the outcome in this case. Isn't that true?
I think that's a fair characterization. I think the trial court did wrestle very much with what was the appropriate remedy in this case. They were faced with an initial motion to dismiss that they denied until hearing the facts. They were also moved to amend this complaint to an unruly adjudication at the end of the evidence. However, after hearing all the facts in the case, they believed that a delinquency finding under the rape statute 2907.02A1B was supported by the record.
So is your office prepared to go into the middle schools of your county and start investigating when there are allegations of 12-year-olds engaging in exploratory sexual contact with each other? Because that really is what will happen. There will be a floodgate that will open where 12-year-olds, whether it's by giving jewelry, whether it's to gain some advantage in the school, will be engaging in all kinds of conduct that your office then will start to prosecute?
Well, Your Honor, I think your point goes to the question of prosecutorial discretion. And obviously, there's always been wide leeway for prosecutors to determine in what cases charges are appropriate. In this particular case, the same reasons that were cited by the trial court as an adjudication of delinquency being appropriate were the considerations that were made by our prosecutor's office in choosing to go forward with charges against DB rather than the other children. In fact, the initial complaint included a separate charge against DB for a violation under 2907.02A1B for sexual conduct that he engaged with another child, AW.
But if the statute is as contended, a strict liability statute with no mens rea, there should not be prosecutorial discretion. If the statute applies, as you suggest, that the legislature intends that there is no sexual contact between children under 13, then your office should have prosecuted MG and AW because they engaged in the prohibited conduct, strict liability standard, no mens rea required.
I think there are a number of considerations why prosecutorial discretion should still apply in this scenario. Under the scenario proposed by you, a situation such as a 12-year-old who engaged in sex with a much younger minor who possibly couldn't articulate what had happened in that circumstance, but where DNA evidence was collected and the 12-year-old made a confession, wouldn't necessarily be chargeable by the state as a rape by force.
Why?
However, it would be chargeable under A1B, given the facts that we had in evidence. And that's a much different scenario. It would seem like an absurd result, in my opinion, that you would be charging potentially a 12-year-old and a 2-year-old in a scenario such as that.
Why was the second charge against the other child dropped?
The second charge against AW was dropped based upon the fact that AW did portray that as voluntary in nature between the two boys.
And was DB bigger than the other child?
Yes, Your Honor.
And did they exchange video games as well?
No, Your Honor, they did not.
And what else did they exchange or do to gay favor?
The premise of that charge, if it had been charged, would strictly have been voluntary sexual conduct that occurred between AW and DB.
So you did not charge when the same activity was occurring between those two, but you charged when the same activity was occurring between these two.
and you're exercising discretion when there's a mens rea of strict liability.
I think it was factually distinguishable, yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, the second point I would make for the court is that under plain rules of statutory construction, where the statute is clear and unambiguous, courts are supposed to give plain meaning to the statute as written. In this particular case, the statute references no person. That statute was initially amended back in 1974. Prior to 1974, the statutory rape statute did make reference to the class of offenders being greater than the age of 18. In 1974, that changed to include the terminology no person. It's been amended or reenacted numerous times since that, and in light of this court's decisions in Ray MD and in Ray Washington, the legislature has taken no action to make amendment of that. Given that, in conjunction with multiple courts of appeal finding the plain meaning of no person in the statutory rape statute applied to members of the protected class, I would advise there is no reason to go into interpretation or the legislative intent in this case. As a
this matter came to your attention by virtue of the DB's father, right? Came
correct,
to the
Your
social
Honor.
Agency and then over to your office.
Correct, Your Honor.
If I understand Juvenile Rule 9, it indicates that formal action is a last resort. Do you agree?
I would agree, Your Honor.
Why wasn't there some other social intervention rather than prosecution in this case, given all the complexities that you have here? And your own decision and admission, you chose not to prosecute A.W. in this instance.
Your Honor, I did not actually charge this through the initial complaint. I can't answer why there was not a recommendation that possibly that be screened through the juvenile court first.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've been hammered pretty good about some decision-making. I want to get into another area, and that is the way this child was treated at the sheriff's office in terms of the interview. The Court of Appeals found didn't make a difference to the outcome, but it sure didn't seem to like what was done, and I wouldn't think we would either. Has your office, as the legal advisor to the law enforcement folks, undertaken to see to it that children are not subjected to interviews in the fashion that this one took place? You done anything about it?
I don't know that there's been any specific directive to law enforcement related to that, Your Honor. No, I do not.
Don't you think there should be?
Possibly, yes. Probably should have been advisement. Although I frankly take a different opinion of the Court of Appeals finding of the voluntary nature of the interview.
It's a 12-year-old.
Sure.
Thank you. Or maybe you're not done.
Last point I would make, Your Honors, is that the Ohio rules of juvenile procedure already apply to scenarios in which courts feel the necessity to either dismiss a case in the interest of justice or the interest of the child, as well as give them the opportunity to amend those charges if they feel it's appropriate. In this particular instance, the trial court was faced with the opportunity to do so based on those very rules two different occasions and chose to find that the facts of the case did not merit amendment and or dismissal of the charges. Based upon those findings, I think the court should offer some deference to the findings of the trial court in finding that the charges were appropriate and affirm the findings of delinquency in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Burns, you've got about a minute of time reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, concerning the deferential treatment of the juvenile court's findings, the Court of Appeals, in reviewing the juvenile court's findings, recognized and stated on paragraph 7 of its opinion that the sexual conduct between the boys was consensual. So the Court of Appeals was not in a place of flux concerning the nature of the boys' conduct.
It is your position, it is not your position that this child should not have been in front of a juvenile judge. It is your position that should have been there on an unruly charge rather than a delinquent charge. Is that?
Your Honor, I do believe that that would have been the more appropriate action to take in this case. If the state wanted to take an action at all, perhaps was to bring all three boys in under unruly behavior.
Well, or if the state felt after reviewing the facts that the child that was out of control was DB, and that was the only one. Are you arguing that they needed to bring the other two in on unruly charges as well?
No, Your Honor. They could have opted to simply bring DB in under unruly charges.
Counsel, was the prosecutorial discretion influenced by the fact, if the fact is correct, that DB was at the time between 180 and 200 pounds and 5'9"? Was that correct?
Your Honor, I don't know whether his height was 5'9". I do believe that he was close to 180 pounds. However, the testimony given at trial demonstrated that DB was actually quite timid in spite of his size, and that his football coaches suggested to his father that he get involved in wrestling to perhaps help him work on his timidity. He was actually on the wrestling team with MG, and the two of them often wrestled together.
But even considering the facts here, you're saying that the chronological age, because DB was under 13, it's the unconstitutionality of the statute as applied to someone under 13, and the possibility of other charges being filed, maybe sexual battery or the unruly conduct. You're not arguing that charges could not have been filed in this situation. It's the use of this particular statute under these circumstances, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And for that reason, we would ask that this court find that 2907.02a1b cannot be constitutionally applied to a child under 13, or in the alternative, that the General Assembly did not intend for it to be applied to such children. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted, and you will be advised of the outcome at an appropriate time.